Good morning. I'd like to thank the Philadelphia Society for inviting me. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here. I will focus, as William already said, on the situation in the Netherlands, not only because I'm Dutch, but also because I think that the situation in the Netherlands is very important, as the Netherlands are more or less the canary in the coal mine of Western civilization. Because in the past few years, we have seen two political murders. We have seen a very tense situation because of the conflict between the Muslim population and the rest of the population, and with an elite that is failing to deal with that problem. In spite of decades of secularization and the alleged end of history, which especially led in the 90s to a decade of naive optimism, Europe, and especially the Netherlands, is seeing a return of religion. And unfortunately, it's not the religion of Christianity as defined by Pope Benedict XVI, but I'm talking about the immigration of millions of Muslims from Turkey and northern African countries. And this new religion poses a serious challenge to the European countries. Especially in the Netherlands, this challenge is because of a fatal combination of two things. In the first place, it is the existence of a refined and detailed welfare state, which means that we give subsidies and refrigerators and radio and television sets to everybody who gets out of work. This was especially true for the immigrants who came from northern Africa to work in the Netherlands. And this combined with the idea of cultural relativism, which especially in the Netherlands is a culture of guilt, of a sense of guilt. We feel, or we felt, very guilty about the fact that we have had colonies. And we also feel very guilty in the second place about the fact that of the 130,000 Jews that were living in the Netherlands in 1940, only 30,000 were still alive at the end of the Second World War. And in fact, the Cultural Revolution of 1968 in the Netherlands began only after a Jewish historian, Jacob Presser, had published a two-volume set in which he described the elimination of the Jewish population in the Netherlands. And that was an important argument for the rising generation at that time to conclude, for this reason and also for the fact that we had colonies in Indonesia, that Western civilization had collapsed, that it was bankrupt, that something entirely new had to be founded. And that talking about a national identity and a cultural identity, and talking about a religious identity, was very dangerous. So at the moment when all those Muslim immigrants came in, we not only welcomed them, but we also told them that they were invited to integrate into Dutch society, but they would not have to do so by giving up some essential features of their cultural identity. We call this integration without giving up your cultural identity, which has proven to be a very difficult thing. So we have created, because of this combination of the welfare state and cultural relativism, parallel societies, enclaves, ethnic enclaves, especially in the four big cities of the Netherlands. And there are some other factors which are important to mention. Michael already said that there is a lot of nonsense about the demographic factor. He mentioned some titles, some books with alarmist titles like While Europe Slept and Londonistan and The Suicide of Europe and other titles. That's highly exaggerated, I believe, but nonetheless, in the Netherlands, we have a population of 16 million people, and at least 1 million of them are Muslim. Well, before the World War, we had 54 Muslims. They already are the majority in the four in the city in the country's four biggest cities. An interesting fact is that most newborn sons in Amsterdam, 55 of 100, are called Mohammed. And in spite of these facts, and in spite of the exaggeration of the demographic factor, in 2025, so within 20 years, the Muslim population will constitute 8% of the entire Dutch population, which means it's sad to say that by then they will have outnumbered the Catholics as well as the Protestants in the Netherlands. In addition to the demographic factor, there is the factor of a fundamental distrust towards the Muslim minority. That's because of their high rates. They score very highly in the criminality rates. It's also because of the death of the murder of Theo van Gogh by a young Muslim radical who was slaughtered on the streets of Amsterdam. And the distrust is also because of the threats, the regular death threats against some Dutch politicians and against some Dutch public intellectuals. Another factor is the discussion, which Michael also mentioned, about the desire among certain Muslim groups in those big cities to introduce the Sharia in their enclaves. And I have to say that politicians are not really refusing that sternly. And there's also a distrust that some Muslim groups have a secret agenda of misusing their rights and liberties for an agenda that will abolish the rights and liberties for others as soon as they can. This is a popular feeling. However, in spite of the problems I've just mentioned, I don't believe that Islam as such is the most important problem in Europe or in the Netherlands, but that the most important thing to mention is our own cultural weakness. There is no answer to the challenge that Islam is posing in Europe and in the Netherlands. I will mention three aspects: a cultural, ecclesiastical, and political. First of all, as for the cultural aspect, there is what we call in the Netherlands, it's a term, I don't know if it's well known here, it's a term coined in the Netherlands by a famous Arabist by the name of Hans Janssen, which is self-Islamization. And it means that you yield to Islamist pressure, that you surrender because you are afraid of the possible effects of what you say or what you do. Let me give you an example. Last year, a professor of New Testament studies at the University of Amsterdam was retiring, and he was to give a farewell lecture, and the subject of that farewell lecture was about anti-Semitism. And he wanted to show the history of anti-Semitism within the Christian culture of the West. And his final remarks were on the fact that there was a lot of anti-Semitism still existent in the Middle East and among Muslims. And when the head of the university heard about this, he censored the farewell address. He said he was not allowed to speak out this address, or he had to skip the final parts because, as the head of the university said, some Muslim groups may become angry because of those passages. And afterwards, when this broke the news, most Muslim groups said, "Well, these are historical facts, and we won't be offended by that." So they had surrendered to a possible consequence of words or deeds that did not take place. Another example is, I don't know if you heard about it, There's a Dutch politician called Geert Wilders, who was about to make a movie about the Quran. It was called Fitna. It's on the internet now. And his announcement of this movie Fitna 4 or 5 months ago has been dominating the news in the Netherlands for the entire period. And the cabinet was very nervous about it. And they said that there would be a crisis and there would be Dutch people in Middle East countries would be attacked or hijacked or whatever. And it turned out that this did not happen at all when a movie finally appeared. And they even asked this politician, Geert Wilders, please do not show this movie. Please stop your project because we are afraid of what might happen. And that's something the Dutch politician did not say in the past few decades or in the past few centuries when politicians or public intellectuals would do the same or more or less the same with another holy writ, namely the Bible. So there is something else, there's something different going on. And the effect of the movie, and when it appeared, everybody was either disappointed or relieved, whatever position you take. And it has caused a lot of debate in the Netherlands. And there's a positive point which Michael a few moments ago also mentioned, is that what you see among a growing minority of Muslim middle-class people or Muslim intellectuals is that they stand up and try to explain to the Dutch that their religion is not like what the movie tells us it is. They want to make clear that they interpret their religion very differently, that the political implications of their religion for them are very different from what we fear them to be. So there is a kind of new awareness among the Muslim population to stand up and explain their position, which is new and which is very important, and we owe it to this radical politician and his movie Geert Wilders and Fitna. And as a final example, I may be allowed to mention my own journal Opinio. We published a couple of weeks ago, we published a lecture given by our Prime Minister. His name is Balken Ende. And in this lecture, which was fake, but it was close to reality, he said the things which we believed he should say, or he should have said. And when this article was published, and it was very plainly a pastiche, a parody of what he normally says, we were sued by the state because of what they called slandering the Dutch regime in the first place, and because this article, a 2,000-word pastiche speech of the Prime Minister, in which he said the things which he did not say, but which, in our view, he should say or should have said. And this pastiche speech was compared by the lawyer of the state to the protocols of the elders of Zion. This pastiche was likely to have the same effects for the Muslim minority as this incredible text of the protocols of the elders of Zion has had in the past for the Jewish minorities. So that tells you something about the Dutch situation. Those are some cultural aspects. As for the ecclesiastical aspect, a reaction to the announcement made by this radical politician Geert Wilders about his movie, the Roman Catholic, I'm sorry to say this, the Roman Catholic Broadcasting Company, KRO, announced that it would make another movie. A movie contrary to fight the movie made by Geert Wilders. And that movie would show how bad and violent the Bible is. You know, Wilders wanted to show that the Quran is a very bad book and elementary fascist. And then the Dutch Catholics wanted to make a movie to show how bad and violent the Bible is. Well, fortunately, the project was not completed because they couldn't find the pictures. And they also believed that in the past anti-abortion activists had killed thousands of doctors here in the United States. But that number was very disappointing to them as well, so they had to stop their project. So you may know the famous columnist Spengler, who's writing in the Asian Times, and he recently wrote a very good article, I believe, about Pope Benedict. And he said that because of what Pope Benedict has been saying in the past few years, the Roman Catholic Church is the best institution and the best defense of Western civilization. And I think we can subscribe to that conclusion only after we have excommunicated the Dutch Catholics. And as for the political aspect, I think they fail to deal with the present situation because Dutch politicians have been educated to negotiate between the interests of different social groups within, you may know, the polarized structure of Dutch society. All groups are different, but they are all equal. They are treated as equal, and every group accepts the other as equal. And so the Dutch politicians were not prepared for the confrontation with another narrative, so to speak, that is not inclusive but exclusive, and ultimately won't tolerate others. I'm borrowing some words of my friend Hillel Fredkin from the Hudson Institute. And another aspect which is making any solution very difficult is what I would call the dogma of religious relativism, which says that Islam and Christianity, the Quran and the Bible, are ultimately all the same, and it doesn't matter very much. That makes a solution very improbable. So because of this situation, we see now in the Netherlands the rise to high popularity of anti-Islam and populist parties. And what we may, politically, the Dutch may be in a transition to away from democracy to an ochlocratic regime. The center is very weak. All traditional parties, the Christian Democrats, the Social Democrats, and the classical liberals, even the three of them at this very moment, would not have a majority in parliament. And in recent years, whatever the situation, we could always fall back on the Christian Democrats and the Social Democrats. In all circumstances, they would have a majority. We could always fall back on that. But even now, when these two groups would be joined by the classical liberals, they would only have 66 seats in a parliament of 150 seats. So there is a radicalization going on and a flee from the center of the political spectre. And there is this trahison d'éclair, this treason among the elite, which says that our culture will inevitably develop into a Judeo-Christian Islamic culture. There's nothing to do about that, and we'll have to accept that. I make some closing remarks, okay? So because of this combination of cultural, demographic, and cultural factors, you may think that I am somewhat pessimistic about the future of my country, but I'm not. Because we have this Edmund Burke Foundation, which mainly has an educational program in which we train young students who are more open-minded than their parents were and their grandparents were. They are open-minded, they are curious, they read great books. There is no bias among them against religion. And when I see them and when I talk to them and their numbers are growing, I'm always thinking of a remark by Tocqueville, who said that every new generation is a fresh nation. We also, within the Edmund Burke Foundation and with the help of the people from ISI, we have created a new Center for European Renewal, which is an initiative to form a network of all conservative think tanks and educational institutions in 13 or 14 European countries. And that's doing very well as well. And it's an initiative that proves the point that Western civilization cannot be saved by the United States or by Europe alone. That's from Christopher Dawson, and it was cited yesterday night by George Nash. But that they have, that the United States and Europe will have to cooperate to rescue, to salvage Western civilization. Yesterday afternoon, I attended the service for in memory of Vic Milioni. And Vic Milioni was sad to have said, "Man does not live by politics alone." It's a very interesting remark. And I believe that a successful program of cultural renewal will be the only road to a renaissance of a virtuous Europe. And I sometimes believe that the tipping point may be imminent. To give a final citation, Whit Stillman, you know, in his famous movie, I don't know if it's famous, but it's a very good movie, The Last Days of Disco, and one of the people says, "Some things are simply too good to disappear." And this holds true for Western Civ especially. So I believe that the canary in the Dutch coal mine must return, and it will return. Thank you very much.